the reality is that the country is becoming more and more divided. You know, you can blame Trump or you can blame whatever you want, but it does seem like we're going in the direction of more division. And I think it's time for every person, all the open and awake hearts and minds in the world, and not just in the U.S., to start coming together and really focus on what we can do.
You're listening to The Corbett Report.
Welcome, friends. James Corbett here, CorbettReport.com. Today is the 30th of January, 2017, and I'm going to be joined today by an old friend of the program who's been on a couple of times. You can check the Corbett Report archives for those conversations. I'm talking to Derek Brose, the founder of the Conscious Resistance Network at theconsciousresistance.com. He's also the lead investigative reporter at activistpost.com, and you'll recall our recent conversations about freedomcells.org, for example. We also talked about agorism and the work of Samuel Konkin. So those interviews are in the archives, as well as, of course, we touched on the Houston Freethinkers Project and the Freethinker House that he's involved with. A lot of fingers in a lot of pies, I suppose. And today we're going to be talking about yet another one of those pies. We're going to be talking about one of the reports that he wrote for activistpost.com that was posted up on January 21st, 2017. President Trump's Attorney General will continue the surveillance state. Perhaps no surprise there, but worth documenting nonetheless. Derek, thank you for joining us again today.
Hey, thank you for having me on, James.
All right. So as people may or may not know, the new Attorney General of the United States is Jeff Sessions, who survived the confirmation gauntlet. For those of us non-Americans, for example, or others who haven't been paying attention, who is Jeff Sessions?
Jeff Sessions is a senator. He's had a long history. He's been around for quite a while. And in the mainstream world, I like to refer to them as the deadstream world. The pundits say he's a racist. He's all these different things, and that's really where the mainstream conversation is focused around the controversy of him. But he's a senator. He's been involved in the game, the political game, for a long time. He's not any anti-establishment person or coming from outside of politics. He's part of this system, very, very much entrenched in it. And as I said, he's got a history with being associated with racism. But I chose in this article to not focus on those issues, instead to look a little bit deeper at what he's associated with and what he talks about.
Yes. You do point, for example, to his adherence to the drug war and, of course, the myth of it, and the fact that anyone who supports it is obviously just trying to increase federal power and destroy lives. But yes, you did choose to focus on a different aspect in this article. You chose to talk about some comments or some of his responses to some of the questions at the confirmation, specifically regarding his take on surveillance, about, for example, what was contained or not contained in the USA Freedom Act and the way he interprets that, as well as the issue of encryption generally and how the Department of Justice might function under Attorney General Sessions. Tell us about that.
Sure. So I was researching Sessions because I kept hearing this talk about this racist guy and all the MSNBC and left-leaning media crying about him because of the racist accusations. So I wanted to look into that. And, the more I dug into it, there were other issues of concern. Not to say, who knows if he's a racist or not. He seems to be associated with some odd characters. But what we do know is his decisions, his comments related to surveillance should definitely raise some eyebrows for people across the political spectrum. And even if you're a Trump supporter, if you care about freedom, you should, consider what this guy has done in the past. And so as a senator, he definitely opposed the USA Freedom Act, which, despite the failures of that act, because as I mentioned in here, it didn't stop surveillance, as they kind of pitch it, Obama stopped NSA surveillance and your emails are now safe. It's totally not true. They have other tools and other methods to acquire that information. But even that act, which was, facetious itself, Sessions opposed that. So he didn't even want some superficial window dressing to address the NSA spying. So that right away should be a red flag. Okay, this guy's not even interested in pretending to care about surveillance. And he continues the old party line that surveillance allows them to catch terrorists and things like that, which I imagine your audience and I know my supporters are very aware that that's proven false time and time over and over again, that mass surveillance doesn't catch terrorists. And for those also who are aware that the United States has been involved in financing terrorists, I think we should pay attention when people like Trump or his appointees talk about international terrorism and global terrorism without mentioning the fact that the U.S. government is involved in funding it. And, you know, that's a very important point to make, because if they're talking about that, they're talking about addressing the symptoms of this terrorism without addressing the root cause of it, you know, the disease of U.S. financing and funding terrorism, then, you know, they're really just missing the point. And they're either doing that ignorantly and they should be informed, but these people are very well connected. I would not say they're ignorant in any way. So I would say that suggests something more nefarious, doing something purposefully, not talking about things that need to be talked about. And those are, again, red flags that people should pay attention to. And the Center for Democracy and Technology, they actually did a pretty good report on Sessions. And one of the things they note is that during his hearings, he basically talked against the Freedom Act, as we just discussed, but he also talked against encryption. He apparently supports the use of cell site simulators, stingrays, which is something that I've been following for years now, and, you know, especially here in Houston. And if you're paying attention to any of the national surveillance news, you'd know that stingrays are becoming an increasing problem around the nation, as local police and federal police, all the different agencies that are being empowered already under the Trump administration, have access to this, from the DEA to the FBI to the NSA to the CIA to tons of other agencies you've never heard of, and your local police department have these tools. And apparently Sessions is okay with that. He doesn't think that they need to have warrants to use those. We also have the Center for Democracy and Technology, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the Constitutional Alliance, and several other digital civil rights organizations signing a letter and sending this to Senator Leahy, saying that, you know, you need to look at the issues, address them with Sessions. They say, "We urge you to carefully investigate Senator Sessions' record on privacy and seek assurances that he will not pursue policies that undermine Americans' privacy and civil liberties." And this isn't just some, you know, faux upset from the left. This is actually things you should be concerned with. Sometimes the left and the right, they play these games that they're so, you know, this outrage, they're so outraged. But this is legitimate outrage. I think people who are of concerned with liberty and freedom and the future of this nation should really be concerned with. And there's more I could go on, James, if you like.
Well, let's back up for a second and go over some of these points. So, for example, sure. On encryption, there's a post up on EFF.org, Attorney General nominee Sessions backs crypto backdoors, which notes that in the written response to the question submitted by Senator Leahy to Sessions for his confirmation, Leahy asks the question, "Do you agree with NSA Director Rogers, Secretary of Defense Carter, and other national security experts that strong encryption helps protect this country from cyber attack and is beneficial to the American people's digital security?" I mean, it's a meaningless question, but it's a no-brainer. Yes, I agree would be the answer. However, the answer that that Sessions gives is, "Encryption serves many valuable and important purposes. It is also critical, however, that national security and criminal investigators be able to overcome encryption under lawful authority when necessary to the furtherance of national security and criminal investigations." Now, those words coming from the newly confirmed Attorney General should send shivers down the spine of anyone who's listening to this conversation, but for the heart of thinking, can you spell out what is so bad about giving the government backdoor to encryption technologies?
Absolutely. So first off, you really got to listen to what he said. I think he said at least two, maybe three times in there, national security, which has been the catch-all phrase that's been used, the Obama administration, the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, Bush administration, go back, back, back. National security is the excuse for nearly everything, in the same way that 9/11 is the 24/7 excuse for everything. They say that whenever they want to do something, and they're trying to, I believe, invoke this this feeling in the public, oh, it's national interest. Well, I'm a part of this nation. I'm a part of this community. I'm a part of the government. This is me, right? So it's for my security. I should, you know, let them do this. And especially to those who are supporting Trump, who seem to have taken up more of a nationalist kind of outlook. And I know that some people are taking this outlook because they're like, well, nationalism is better than globalism. But that sort of appeal to nationalism or to the nation state is a very easy, as we're seeing, emotional heartstring to tug and to pull and to play people with. So all you have to do is really get them to identify and feel like, oh, this is going to be good for your country, for America, make America great again. And they're willing to go along with it. So I feel like this appeal to national security is probably a part of that. In addition to that, when he says, you know, he mentions the legality of it. So what he's saying is that we need to change the laws to make it legal for us to crack encryption to get in there. Right now, there's probably some slight legal barriers. They're doing it already, right? But they want it to get in on the books. This is how things have changed for the past administrations. They do it for as long as they can until there's enough public backlash where it becomes public information.
And again, this isn't theoretical. This isn't theoretical because this was exactly the issue, for example, in the San Bernardino iPhone saga where they wanted to unlock that phone. What did they find in there? Oh, right. Nothing of import that ever got reported. But there was this whole legal saga about it. Can the government force Apple to unlock that phone? Yeah. And at the time, what did candidate Trump said? He said, quote, "To think that Apple won't allow us to get into that cell phone. Who do they think they are? No, we have to open it up." Again, this is now the president of the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. That should, again, it should be a red flag and tell people that this is not somebody who's supporting freedom. And the interesting aspect of that, you think that, okay, Trump is a businessman. Would he really be okay if the government came to him and said, hey, we need you to open up Trump Towers and show us something in there? Like, no, he would be fighting them the entire way. And his supporters would cheer him on. They'd be like, yeah, Trump's taking on the government. But now if it's reversed and he says, hey, you know what, we need to be able to get in there, and the Apple thing, the iPhone, it set a precedent now. Now the FBI has been able to get into people's phones. So they have a point to reference to say, well, we did it before and they let us do it then. So that's how these things happen. They get away with it for as long as they can, then they bring it to your attention, and then they get the public to support it, and then they codify it into law.
Well, they stopped right at the doorstep of codifying that into law because they found another way in. They found a company that would help them break into the iPhone, so they didn't have to force Apple to do it. But they were on the precipice of setting that legal precedent, and now we know that Trump and his attorney general would be more than happy to set that legal precedent when and if it comes up again. And of course, the whole point of this is even if Sessions and Trump and everyone in the administration is a total angel sent from heaven to look after the public and their interest, the point is, if you create back doors for the government, well, guess what? Any criminal can find those back doors as well. It is purposefully weakening the security of the systems. It is insanity.
And I think that it's also, you know, with this recent news that 1984 is like the best-selling book on Amazon, right? It's getting a renewed attention. And when you think about what takes place in 1984, the normalizing of this constant surveillance and Big Brother-type tactics, I feel like this is all a part of that as well, because the encryption gets broken down. Like you said, it's weakening it not only for government criminals, but just street criminals, people out there, anybody who wants to try to get into your information. But it's getting to that point where, like with Amazon Echo, the voice is always listening. There's always somebody listening. So people will come to feel like, well, encryption's not important. It keeps the nation safe. I really should, you know, I should allow them to listen to me all the time. It's probably better for my nation. And I think that's part of this overall push. You know, from the beginning, I've been calling Trump the great divider. I feel like he's really coming in, playing this anti-establishment role to feed into the people who want that and wanted to oppose Obama and wanted to oppose all the things that they didn't like about him. And again, they're willing to make excuses for his behavior. And then on the other side, it's outraging the left, and they're feeling justified in all the things they, you know, that they want to fight about and resisting it. But in reality, when you step back, all it's doing is just tearing people apart. People who maybe would have been willing to work together are now being completely divided by this man, his administration, and by people like Jeff Sessions.
Well, that's a good point for a turning point in this conversation, because I always hate to leave people with the doom and gloom without giving them something, you know, of real substance of what they can be doing against this proactively. And of course, I don't think the real answer to this is going to come from government or writing your congressman. On that note, of course, we know about your activities there in Houston, but let's remind people about the Houston Freethinkers, about the House. Give them some updates about what's going on there.
Yeah, thank you, James. I appreciate that. So I'm in Houston, Texas. I live right near downtown in the east end of downtown. And Houston is a city. There's no zoning or regulations in our city, so that's one of the benefits. You know, you have like churches right next to strip centers and bars and clubs, and it's all just kind of mixed together. And it drives people really crazy who like state regulation, but for those of us who enjoy the freedom of it, it's beneficial. So that means we've been able to, me and two other members of the Houston Freethinkers activist community, which has always been focused on solutions, we moved into the Freethinker House, as I told you before, back in October, and we're using this as a staging ground for the concept of freedom cells. So we've been here since October and been having great success. We've now started to, you know, our garden has really bloomed, and we've been able to use apps like Nextdoor.com to connect with people right in our own community and sell them stuff from our garden. And we've been bottling kombucha tea and juice and just different anything that we can think of to create counter-economic activity and use these apps, the technology that we have today, to connect directly to our community. And we're not using, you know, there's no taxes involved in that. We're trying to educate them about Bitcoin and about these concepts and inviting them to our house to see what we do here. We also do benefit shows. The other night we raised about $320 for human trafficking, survivors of human trafficking, by working with local musicians and local artists. So really trying to plug and create a hub for community. And at the same time as the people come here, we educate them about why we're doing this, why we want to get away from government and corporate power. We want to empower ourselves. We want to show individuals that they can take their lives in their own hands. So through the experience and by creating the space that people can come and feel, they can discover music, they can watch documentary screenings, they can get involved in the garden, or you know, whatever way they want to get involved, we give them a space to see what we're trying to do and hopefully spread that concept. So things have been going great since October, and we were just getting more and more entrenched into the community with our products, and people are starting to stop by because they want to see what we're doing here and hear more about it. So I definitely recommend individuals, whether or not you're in the position to do what we're doing exactly, but to find ways to connect to your community, because the reality is that the country is becoming more and more divided. You know, you can blame Trump or you can blame whatever you want, but it does seem like we're going in the direction of more division. And I think it's time for every person, all the open and awake hearts and minds in the world, and not just in the U.S., to start coming together and really focus on what we can do, because it's going to take some strong bonds, both familial bonds and I would say the bonds of your closest neighbors, to survive whatever's coming, especially if people are willing to, as we're seeing, just take their arguments to the street and beat each other up. Both the Trump supporters and the Trump critics are just willing to duke it out in the streets these days, and that's what's coming to, what things are coming to. People are not willing to have, you know, debates, conversations that actually are enlightening and engaging and learn from each other. They just want to fight. And but there are those of us out here who are looking for something different. I'm so thankful for that. But I think it's time for us to really seize that opportunity, to not sit by idly and just, okay, well, it's, you know, it's another, Trump is just continuing the legacy of everything that's taken place, but things are getting worse, and that's just the part of the plan. So I think it's time for that to come together. So we're excited about that. And the concepts within that are going to be have already been written into the last book in the Conscious Resistance book series that myself and John Vibes have written. And I went to visit John, who's also a writer for the Free Thought Project and other independent media websites. We went to his place in Maryland. He's got a cabin in the woods, and we just stayed there for a week and wrote for about 8 to 12 hours each day. And we completed our book in 1 week. And it is now has a title. It's called Manifesto of the Free Humans, and we really feel like it's going to be a powerful guidebook, sort of how-to on how to create freedom cells, a new exposition of all the past work that Samuel Konkin did on agorism and bringing that into the modern era with some expansion on his work. And the last part is just like, here's how we would build an ideal community, take these ideas, use them, and some really practical steps on how to use freedom cells. So we're going to be releasing that in April at the Free Your Mind Conference in Philadelphia, and it'll be online for free, download, audiobook, all that good stuff. And then this summer, I'm going to be going on a tour across the country with John. He's actually treating his lymphoma cancer without chemo right now, killing it in all sorts of natural, other holistic ways. So he should be healed by then, by the summer, by July, and we're going to go on tour around the U.S. and help people build freedom cells, tell them how he beat his cancer. We're going to be bringing a couple of musicians with my other two roommates from the Freethinker House, talking about what we're doing and hopefully really inspiring people to create this, because I think it's more important than ever to launch these projects, especially in the face of the Trump era. We're only a week and a couple of days in, and it's not looking like there's going to be much change. So, excuse me, I think it's time for us to really buckle down and to do what we can do. If you believe in voluntarism or creating a voluntary society, what are you doing to bring that into action? I feel like a lot of activists are really becoming armchair activists or just sitting behind the screen debating. And I talk to some activists, and they're telling me about the meme wars they're involved in. And I'm like, meme wars? This is where your activism is at these days? Like, there's real world things taking place. You know, there's people like yourself who do quality, beautiful reports and help educate people and move them to a place of action. And I try to do the same, as well as being ingrained in the community and showing people, look, this is how easy it can be, you know, just start growing your own food, selling to people. There's agorism right there. You know, here's an app that allows you to connect without government involvement. You know, just the tools are there. We just need to do it. So I'm really excited about this coming year and what's taking place despite the, you know, beginning of the Trump era. I think there is going to be lots of opportunity for positive change. So I hope that people will check that out. And if you're interested in the tour, you can check out theconsciousresistance.com/tour.
You know, you are a flurry of activity at all times, but things really seem to be ramping up right now. And for people who are interested in the Manifesto of Free Humans, Humanity?
Yeah, Manifesto of the Free Humans, yeah. We haven't put a book page yet, but actually if you go to youtube.com/consciousresistance, by the time this video is up, I'm putting out a video today that's the sort of official announcement of the book. And later today, Monday, we're going to be releasing the first preview chapter from the book, which I think is quite fitting for our conversation. It's called The Authoritarian Right and Left. And it's talking about how the fascism is coming from all sides these days, and people need to be aware of that. So that'll be out. If you go to theconsciousresistance.com, you'll see that and our YouTube channel.
Very timely indeed. Excellent. Well, I'm glad to hear that. And for people in the Houston area that might be interested in checking out the house?
Yeah, check us out on facebook.com/thefreethinkerhouse. Or if you're not on Facebook, just go to thehoustonfreethinkers.com. Send a message through the contact. I get all that. We're always willing to work with new people.
Excellent. Well, it is good that there are activists out there that are still attempting to make change, no matter what government figures are in power and what they're attempting to do. So, Derek Brose, thank you very much for that. We'll direct people once again to theconscienceresistance.com and to activistpost.com. And of course, the links for everything we've talked about will be in the show notes for this interview. Derek Brose, thank you again for your time.
Thank you, James.
The Corbett Report is brought to you by the Corbett Report subscriber. A weekly newsletter featuring James Corbett's International Forecaster editorial, recommended reading and viewing, discounts on Corbett Report DVDs, and once a month, a subscriber-only video. Sign up today to start receiving your copy at corbettreport.com/support.